So I'm going through a different handout. Okay, can I start? I'm going through a different handout. It's most of it is on the handout that you have, but parts are not. And it's from Bonn in 2008, maybe, I don't remember. And, no, maybe 2009. The URL is anyway printed. It's one of the references for the handouts that I used previously. So again, the overall structure is that I guess it's going backwards. I'm starting from a not theoretic statement, translating it to the diagrammatic statement, using low algebra, translating it to an algebraic statement, using a certain correspondence between universal enveloping algebras and differential operators. I'm translating it to a unitary statement, and then another translation steps which I haven't mentioned, and finally it becomes a statement about convolutions on a Lie group on a Lie algebra. So that's what I want to go through. But let's start with the topological statement. So I'm talking about, so okay, just a reminder, you know, I could be talking about knots and links, and then it's the planar algebra generated by a crossing modulo Rademeister moves, or I could be talking about trivalent tangles, just in order, just tangles with an extra vertex, and then it will be the planar algebra generated by a crossing, a vertex, Rademeister moves, but now you need an additional Rademeister move, and the additional Rademeister move is to take a lasso from either above or below a vertex. So now I'm in three dimensions, not in four dimensions. Okay? But you also get an additional operation, and the additional operation is this unzip operation. And so this is all background. And now I want to, sorry, and the next thing is that I want to move on to four dimensions. So W trivalent, I guess at the time I called it tangles, now I call it foams, but it's the same thing. So W trivalent foams are the following things. Well, it has W generators, W relations, and unary W operations. So like here, generators, relations, and further operations. Okay? But now I need to review what these are. So the generators, you remember, there is the crossing, but it now represents a four-dimensional thing or flying rings or whatever. There is the virtual crossing, which represents, again, tube in four dimensions which do not intersect, or flying rings which fly outside of each other. You know that. But then the new stuff, well, there is the cap, which isn't really new. There is the when, which in fact, topologically, it's a sort of a piece of a Klein bubble. But I think I described it in another language, but it's good enough as it is. And then there is the smooth vertex, which we already used enough, it turns out, is too easy. And there is the singular vertex. And the singular vertex is a vertex in which two rings fly towards each other and then merge and become one. Okay? And it's singular because at the merging moment, you have a line or a circle worth of Y graphs. Right? Because it's two things below and one thing above. Okay? The singular vertex has some asymmetry. I mean, when you actually think about how to embed it in R4, there is necessarily some asymmetry. And I'm just mentioning it and not saying anything about it. Okay. And then there are relations, and I'm just reviewing the relations. So there are the usual Rademeister 2, 3, 4. There is the virtual Rademeister moves, and again, now I have also a virtual Rademeister 4 when I slide. Anyway, there is the overcrossings commute, but not undercrossings commute. The when squared is equal to 1, so if you flip a ring twice, then it's like not flipping it at all. And then there are funny interactions between the one and the cap and all the other things. So Well, overcrossings commute, I'm just reviewing here. The funny interactions are the differences between, well, you know, you can slide stuff over but not under a cup. And here is a little picture that explains why. And you I hope you remember it. And likewise, when you slide stuff over a when, it goes well, but below a when, it gets twisted. Okay? So we've done all of that, and that's just a review. And now there are the unary operations. Okay? And the unary operations are the sort of extra operations. So there is an unzip operation, much like for three-dimensional knots. Instead of if you have a line, you can cut it and have two parallel lines. So if you have a tube, you can double it, and you'll have an inner tube and an outer tube, right? But the tube is just an annulus, so I call it unzip along an annulus. Now, if you unzip a tube between two vertices, and if the two vertices, and again, now I'm not being careful about orientations, but if the two vertices are of the right kind, then when you unzip, you can basically slide the two things out of each other, and you just get two parallel lines, two parallel tubes. Okay? And then there is also an unzip along the disk. So if you have a vertex and it is cupped, the thing above is just a disk. I mean, it's a disk embedded in a funny way, looking like, what do you call it? What do you put on your finger when you saw? Timble. Right. Timble? What?
Like thimble?
Whatever. Thimble. Okay, you're right. Okay. So when you unzip a thimble, then, well, basically the two things split and you get a single vertex. So Jorgen, I'm actually repeating a talk in which you were the chair in Bonn. And that was after a discussion in which it was clear that I better start from scratch.
Okay.
Okay? At least it was clear to me. Okay? So now it's clear what my space of things is. Has generators, relations, and operations. Okay. Now the not theoretic statement. There is a universal finite type invariant. Again, the meaning of this should by now become natural. Okay? So there is a universal finite type, a homomorphic expansion. So a universal finite type invariant that respects all available operations for trivalent W tangles. Okay? In particular, Z should respect Rademeister 4. So Z of that side should be Z of that side, and Z should intertwine the unzip moves. So if I compute Z of this mess, and then, I guess I should have said, again, by introspection in four dimension, the vertex that appears at the top of an unzip is really the same as the vertex that appears at the bottom with conjugated by three wens. So basically, and again, that requires four-dimensional introspection, and I don't want to do it. Sorry, it's not that I don't want to do it. To be honest, I can't. Okay? I could, but now I can't. If you want to split in one way, it's the same as flipping over, flying, splitting, and flipping both back. So if you want, the opposite of one split is to flip over, fly, and flip the other way, and flip back. Okay? Okay, So if you unzip a twisted vertex, or the edge around a twisted vertex, you get a knot. So if you unzip after computing z, you should be getting z of the identity. So this, and likewise, if you compute z before or after a unzipping here, you should be getting the same thing. Okay. Next thing is to understand the target space, and it's the usual understanding that we've had many times. So you alternate between having a crossing or not having it, and you get arrow diagrams, and these arrow diagrams satisfy relations, and I'm just reviewing what they are. Okay? So the relations turn out to be the 4T relation, which is the same as before, the vertex invariance relation. So you see, since my vertices had Rademeister 4 democratically, they will have, I guess I should have said it, that they have Rademeister, I said it, I suppose. They have Rademeister 4 democratically, so there is a democratic kind of vertex invariance relation, both for arrow heads and arrow tails. So I wrote it with both directions. The way to view it is if you have, if you have two things that fly together and then break apart, but they fly through something else, then they could fly through and break, or break before and then then each should fly through. And equally well, if you have a small thing, and that's sort of different than in the, then this is as distinct from the other type of vertex. If you have a small thing and it flies through and then these break, then it would be the same as they break and then it flies through the first and then through the second. Okay? Again, this is as opposed to the other type of vertex in which the breakup is like in a pair of pants, and if you fly through and then you kind of, basically it depends which half you flew through, you flew through. So you could, anyway, so maybe I should not talk about the other vertex. But anyway, we have a democratic Rademeister 3, and therefore we have democratic vertex invariants. Then we have tails commute and the two STU relations. A head near a cap is zero. You can move heads across wens, but if you move them, you move tails across wens, you get a sign, and that's all. Okay, so now let's convert it to a diagrammatic statement. So if I want to if I want to define an invariant of of a finitely generated object, it's enough that I define it on the generators. Since my object was generated, since my thing was generated by the crossing, the vertex, and the wen, sorry, and the, not the wen, the cap, I just need to tell you what the values of the crossing, the cap, and the vertex are. The wen turns out to be, basically, because the square of the wen is equal to 1, its value is forced to be 1. So I don't even need to tell you what the value of the wen is. But anyway,
why is square to 1 means it's 1 itself?
Because in a because in the algebra A, if something square to 1 is squares to 1, then it's 1. Okay, because it's a graded algebra, and if you look, it's okay. So now the value of the crossing was already fixed. Now you could maybe fix it to be something else, but in fact you can prove that you can't. So there is only one way to solve the crossing equations, and this is to the Rademeister 1 through 3, sorry, 2 and 3, and this is the exponential. So R is the exponential of a single arrow. And then I still have to find the value of a cup, and it takes values in on a skeleton which has a cup at the end, and the value of the vertex, and it takes value, oh, where does it take value? It is supposed to take value, so the value of the vertex should be in, well, let me use a fresh blackboard. Should be in A of, so V should be in A of that. No, upside down that, sorry. In this skeleton. On this skeleton. But remember that I have the vertex invariance relation that allow me to push stuff from above the vertex to below the vertex. Anything above the vertex becomes the sum of the two ways of putting it below the vertex. So I may as well write V, as something lying on just two strands and sort of put the vertex on top. So this is V. This is the V that I'm looking for. Okay, but now what are the equations? Well, I think it's quite obvious. This is Rademeister 4, right? The value of the vertex, so V with a vertex placed on top of it, the value of a vertex is by definition, is by declaration, V with a vertex put on top of it, and then followed by a crossing, so if you have a thing that crosses over, then it's the same as, crossing above the vertex, it's the same as V below the vertex and two R's, and then crossing the two legs one at a time. Okay? So, by the way, a few comments. First of all, the R here, I wasn't careful, well maybe maybe you can read the orientation from the thing on top. The R here as arrows going to the right. In principle, I should be verifying also the equation in which the R has arrows going to the left. But that equation is automatic. That equation does not put any constraints on V because it follows from the sort of many hook argument. Because I have a 40 relation for arrow heads. And so I can, so it follows. Okay? Again, so this is the only equation that you really, How much is it fair to skip? Is this something that is fair to skip or should I show it? The other equation follows trivially. And the other thing is, sort of, here's another little place in which to see that V is forced to be asymmetric. Because the R's here have to appear in some order. And it's not, why shouldn't they appear in the opposite order? And the answer is because V is not symmetric. Because if you slide something under a V, then it's not the same, then it goes first through one and then through the other. Okay. And then there are the other equations, and the other equations are, well, if you take two V's but conjugate one of them to get the opposite V, then unzip, you get the identity. So basically unzipping a vertex connected to its opposite is the identity, and unzipping a cup, so a vertex, a cupped vertex, so unzipping a disk, gives you just two cups. So the value of the vertex multiplied the value of a cup is equal to the product of two cups. Okay. Okay, the next thing you kind of know well, and I'm wasting your time, so I will not waste your time, but basically if you have a Lie algebra lowercase g, by the way, the fact that it's not showing is a problem of the projector, not of me. So the projector is cutting off the very left. But anyway, if you have a Lie algebra g, then any arrow diagram on a line skeleton becomes an element of the universal enveloping algebra of the of IG, and we talked about it. I don't need to talk about it again. Okay. So now I can now I can turn it into an algebraic statement. But the new thing is that in this algebraic statement, I should also have an interpretation for A of a cup. Now, what's A of a cup? I think we mentioned it already. A of a cup is, it's like the universal enveloping algebra of IG, meaning of G semi-direct product G dual, but you mod out by the universal enveloping algebra of G as a right ideal. Okay, mod out on the right, because any head near the cup should go to zero. There is an obvious projection from here to the symmetric algebra of G dual. Sorry. To the universal enveloping algebra of G dual, but the universal enveloping, but G dual is abelian, so this is the symmetric algebra of G dual. Okay? So it's not equals, it maps. Okay? So, let's read it. So, C is this projection into the symmetric algebra of G dual. Now, I somehow, in order to properly describe flipping over V and conjugating by a when, putting when in three places, I need a few more algebraic tools. So, first of all, I need to tell you what flip over means. Flip over is, I guess I can go to this picture. Suppose I wanted to tell you what is the element of the universal enveloping algebra corresponding to this diagram flipped over. Or alternatively, flip over the arrow. Okay? So there will be some signs, but mostly what it will be to reverse. In fact, there will be a minus sign per vertex, per leg on the arrow. But the more interesting thing will be that you will be reversing the order by which you will be reading the legs, and that's exactly what the antipode of the universal enveloping algebra does. So every universal enveloping algebra has an antipode, and what it does is it multiplies by minus one to the degree and flips all words over. Okay? So that's S, but you see, when you're talking about IG, in general that's all you have, but for the specific Lie algebra IG, there is a second automorphism, or there is an automorphism, and there is the automorphism which flips the sign of just the star part, of just the dual part. Okay? So I guess the claim is that there is always an automorphism of IG, which is called W, which maps G to itself and G dual to negative G dual. You can check that it preserves all the relations. In fact, it's sort of obvious because, maybe the way to see that it's obvious is to see that the other one is not true. So flipping the sign of G is not an automorphism because because it changes the sign of the bracket, because because if you have a relationship like xy bracket of xy is z, then flipping the sign of then on the left you will be flipping two signs and on the right you will be flipping one sign. So flipping the sign of G is not an automorphism. But in IG, G star was taken to be abelian. So you had a zero on the right if you were taking element of G star of G dual. So flipping the sign of G dual does lead to an automorphism. So let W be that automorphism. And again, it is trivial, or not trivial, it is this is the counterpart of conjugating by the wen. This is the Lie algebraic counterpart of conjugating by a wen. In other words, if you have some arrow diagram and you put wens on both sides, sorry, let me draw it as a commutative diagram. So you could put wens on both sides and then apply the tensor map, interpret it as tensors. So interpret it as both as tensors. So here you will have something in U of IG, and here you will have something in U of IG. And the claim is that this is induced by the automorphism W. Right? But if you look at what W does, at what sliding something across a wen was, it was exactly negating the tails but not negating the heads. So flipping the sign of G dual but not flipping the sign of G. So the algebra, okay, so just to explain where W came from. Next, what is the under this tensor map, what is the image of R? What is the image of the thing that were of the exponential of an arrow? So an individual arrow lives in G dual tensor G. Okay? Or more precisely, an individual arrow in individual arrow, call the image of an individual arrow R, and R more precisely lives in U of IG tensor U of IG, the way the tensor map was defined. Okay? But it lives in a small part of that because it's of degree 1 on both sides, and on the left it's in G dual and on the right it's in G. And unfortunately, no, not unfortunately, I chose the right ordering. Okay? So lowercase r lives here. Uppercase r should be, or uppercase R should go to the exponential of lowercase r, and it's an exponentiation that happens in this algebra above. Okay? So it will live in U of IG, but for my reasons, I chose to write the second part not as U of IG, but as U of G. Because it anyway lives in the subset generated by it anyway lives in the subset. Okay? This is, okay, that's just here I did bother to indicate which subspace it lives here or lives in, and here I didn't bother. Why? Because on the left I'm going to need it to multiply it by things that are outside of that subspace, and on the right I will not need to do it. So, okay. And then what are the equations? Oh, sorry. And finally, there is omega in the symmetric algebra. So omega is the value of the cup, and it lives in A of a cupped line, which gets mapped to the symmetric algebra of the dual. So there is omega, lowercase omega, in the symmetric algebra of the dual, and most importantly, there is a value for the vertex. V stands for vertex, not for vendetta. And it lives in the universal enveloping algebra of IG tensor squared. Okay? And then what are the equations? So you just read off the equations from above. You just read them. Okay? And the equations are V installed on the first two components multiplied by R, to which you double the first component. This is literally the left-hand side of this, right? If you push R down, you will be doubling the first component of R. Okay? So, you know what? Maybe I'll make a view in which the equations are all visible at the same time. Yeah. So, no, sorry. I'm in the wrong... Yeah, okay. So this thing is quite obviously that thing. And then here you have R installed on strands 1 and 3, so installed on tensor factor 1 and tensor factor 3, so R1, 3, multiplied by R installed on tensor factor 2 and then tensor factor 3, this is here, times V. V is just the same V installed on the first two tensor factors, and that's the equation. And where does it live? It really lives on three strands, meaning on U of IG tensor cubed. By luck, it lives in on the third strand. I only have a G, because I only had on the third strand. I only had R's and R on the right hand side of R's, so it's in G. Okay. Then this equation, so I have to take a V, flip it over, meaning apply the antipode, and then conjugate by Wenz. So it's V times SW, not Cyberg-Witten, just SW of V is equal to 1. Okay? And the last equation is, if you take a V, multiply it by, so take a V, sorry, take an omega, push it down, which means apply the coproduct, multiplied by V, and then unzip, which amounts to saying cup the two sides, so project the two sides to the symmetric algebra, then that's the same as two copies of omega. So these equations are the same as the equations above. Okay. I feel better. Do you feel better?
Yeah, why? Just remind me, why did C do the unzip?
C didn't do the unzip.
No, but why is that the same thing?
Once I push omega to below the vertex, doing the unzip is to do nothing.
Yeah.
Because this is empty.
Right.
So unzipping is just do nothing. So all I have to do is, so basically what I do is, I look at omega,
Push it down
and regard it as an element of the universal enveloping algebra of IG.
Yeah.
Or tensor squared.
Yeah, tensor squared.
And then I unzip, which means do nothing, but then I have to project, I got the left-hand side, but thought of us in as living on two strands which are not capped. But I'm only asserting this equality if the two strands are capped. So then I need, so I need to project.
It does not hold if you don't do if, E tensor C.
It does not hold, right. Yeah. I mean, the equation makes sense even if I don't do C tensor C, but I don't expect it to hold.
Right.
It, and it does not.
No.
Naturally. Okay? So there is no, there is not much waste here.
Yeah.
Things hold.
C basically kills everything that has an arrow going into the strength.
Yes. Or alternatively, as in Lie algebraic terms, it's the projection from here to the symmetric algebra.
Yeah.
And by the way, in differential, in unitary operator language, you'll see what it is. It's also a very natural thing. Okay. So next, I want to translate everything to unitary, to the language of differential operators. So it will be tangential differential operators, acting always on tangential directions. And I already told you what the interpretation is. So an element of G dual becomes a multiplication operator. It's a function, so it's a multiplication operator. And an element of x becomes the direction, tangential derivation, well, what I wrote before. Sorry, so now I'm allowing myself to refer to what I said before. And again, this is the explicit formula. So basically, again, if you have a Lie algebra, I don't know what a Lie algebra is. It's a vector space. Other elements of the vector space of the Lie algebra itself correspond to infinitesimal rotations of this vector space, and I'm differentiating in the direction of these infinitesimal rotations. So, you know, for SO3, this would be derivatives in the directions of infinitesimal rotations, so always tangent to the spheres, to the orbits. Okay? And then the fun thing, what does C become? So C is a map from differential operators to functions. And it's the map that annihilates every actual differentiation. Because it's the map that annihilates G, and G is what represents differentiation. So it's just the map. So how do you annihilate differentiations? You differentiate one. You have a differential operator, you want to annihilate all derivatives, you differentiate one. And then what you're left with is the constant term.
Well, it's the degree zero term.
Yeah, yeah, so sorry. Okay, that's my name. Okay, that's what the constant term means in my language. The degree zero piece. Okay, so C just means, so basically everything has an interpretation, and the interpretation is completely straightforward. Okay, so now let's interpret all of these statements. The statements above. These statements are statements on differential operators. So here's the trick, or here's the thing. I want to think of So consider V, for example. It's an element of UIG squared, so it should be thought of as a differential operator on two copies of the Lie algebra. And it's acting, both the derivations on the left and the derivations on the right act only in tangential directions. So that's V. Okay? But I can automatically extend it to vector space valued functions. Right? Whenever you have a differential operator, you can extend it to from scalar functions to vector space valued functions. So instead of so I think of it, so by doing nothing, I think of it as a differential operator acting on functions with values on UG. So I'm sort of considering the third tensor factor in equation one, the third tensor factor as just being like auxiliary, what do you call it? Extra coordinates, I don't know. What would you call this process of extension?
Internal. internal symmetry?
Internal symmetries, maybe, yes. I mean, when you act on
Say it again, when you act on what?
Instead of acting on functions, you make it act on vector-valued functions. So what would you call the extra degrees of freedom? I don't know. But anyway...
For example, connections, it's called the trivial connection. You know, you have D acting on...
It's the fact that the trivial connection extend... Anyway. So I'm not sure what to call it, but now... Okay, but now maybe let's start with interpreting this. So I interpret... the two tensor factors that appear here as x and y. So I'm calling the variables that live. So I'm talking about functions on the Lie algebra squared. So I'm calling the first factor x, and the second factor y. Okay. So what does R23 become? So R23 is an element, so R23 becomes e to the lowercase R23, which is an element of the universal enveloping algebra of I G of Y, because I'm putting it on the second coordinate, tensor the auxiliary, I'm regarding the third factor as auxiliary variables, as auxiliary degrees of freedom, so U of G. But over here, it's just in G-dual, as I mentioned. So it's really just a function on G. Which function is it? Well, it's the coordinate. Or, you know what, how should I say that? Okay, let's interpret R23. R23 is simply, so you should be thinking of it as a function of on G dual direct sum G dual, sorry, on G tensor G, so a function on G of X tensor G of Y with values in G. Which function is it?
Independent of X.
What?
It's
the identity. It's the function which maps this to that.
Yeah.
It's the function Y.
Yeah. Independent of X and Y.
Yeah. So the exponential of it is e to the Y. But I'm regarding it as a multiplication operator. So this R23 becomes the multiplication by e to the y. V becomes V, e to the x becomes e to the x. Delta tensor 1 of R becomes x plus y as an e to the x plus y. Well, basically everything makes sense, I hope.
Now we see the nature of the hat, right? I mean, because we're in the hat and not in the universal way of developing algebra anymore.
Yeah, so now I need to look at some completion. Everything has to be completed, okay? Otherwise, exponentiations don't make sense. Okay, this is even better. Suppose you have a differential operator, and the differential operator is a sequence of multiplication by functions. So, you know, you multiply by f, and then you differentiate first order derivative, and then you multiply by another function, and then you differentiate again, and so on. What is the adjoint of such a differential operator? Well, the adjoint reverses the order and flips the sign of the derivatives, that's integration by parts, but keeping the f's at the same way, in the same place. But that's exactly what the Seiberg-Witten thing does, SW does. Okay, so the equation 2 becomes V dual is the identity, and that's the fact that V is a unitary operator. Okay, does it make sense? Sheriar, does it make sense? Are you telling the truth?
Almost.
basically, okay, I don't know what else to say. And then the last equation becomes, apply the differential operator to a function, and it should be, so strictly speaking, without the C, it would be the statement, if I didn't project with the C's, it would be the statement, the differential operator followed by multiplication by this function is the same as multiplication by this function. But then I evaluate at 1, this is what the C does, and it just means apply the differential operator to this function and you get this function. Okay?
It's very different from the other statement, of course.
Yeah. And but I.
The C is really.
But the C is there.
Yeah.
No lies. Okay. Or at least no big lies. Okay. The next thing is now I want to use unitarity. Okay. So consider this integral. So take two functions, phi and psi, new functions, and these are just scalar-valued functions on the Lie algebra, scalar-valued functions that are conjugation invariant. So they're functions on the orbits. Okay? And consider the integral dx dy of omega x plus y squared e to the x plus y phi of x phi of y. This is e to the x plus y is in the universal enveloping algebra. So this is the integral of not of a scalar valued function but of a universal enveloping algebra valued function. But that's still fine. I can integrate vector valued functions. So this integral, on the one hand, it's the usual L2 inner product of written here. I think it's obvious. On the other hand, by the unitarity of V, it's equal to that. Is this obvious? I think it's obvious. Next, but on the left I apply V to omega x plus y, so by one of the equations I get omega x omega y. And on the other hand, I can commute V across the e to the x plus y. This is the which equation? This was equation 1. So I will get e to the x, e to the y, V. And then I can, this I copy. But now I apply V to, but phi x and phi y are orbit, are invariant. And V has only differentiations tangent to the orbit. So V commutes with phi x and phi y and psi y. So I can move V to the other side and then I apply it to omega x plus y and I get omega x omega y. And now I reinterpret the bracket as a double integral. So I learned something about double integrals, and what I learned is that there exists some function omega squared, so that for every pair of invariant functions, and assuming this whole thing makes sense analytically, then we have the following equality, and it's an equality in U of G, not a scalar equality. I'm probably running out of time, but it's going well, so I don't know what to do. I've run out of time a long time ago. Let me say one word, just one word, okay? What is a convolution? Okay? So a convolution is just an ordinary multiplication in the group ring. Right? So an element of the group ring is like a function on the group because you have a convolution, a coefficient for each group element. And then, so a convolution is just a multiplication in the group ring. Now, the group ring of a Lie group in some sense, is its universal enveloping algebra completed. Because for every Lie element, it has an exponential, and it's an element of the group of the universal enveloping algebra. So for every Lie element is represented by its exponential, which is in the universal enveloping algebra, and then you can take linear combinations of these. So the universal enveloping, the completed universal enveloping algebra is somehow an imitation of the group ring, or a substitute for the group ring. The thing that is written here, ignoring the green factors, is multiplication in the group ring. So you take e to the x with coefficient phi x, so you take an arbitrary element in the group ring, and you multiply it by another one, and you use the non-commutative product of the group ring. The thing written on the left, and again ignoring the tensor of the coefficients, is the same thing, but done in the universal enveloping algebra, in which you have declared the commutator to be zero. Okay? So, in other words, so instead of e to the x times e to the y, you can replace it by e to the x plus e to the y. So, this means convolution in the original group. This is convolution in the group made abelian, meaning the Lie algebra, meaning just the Lie algebra, and therefore this is the convolution statement. So if I were to be precise, it would require more work, but I just gave you the sketch. The last bit really was a sketch. Okay? So, it really was a sketch, but this is the, well. So, I guess we will meet again at 2:00.